Let's check in with Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. Joe, how excited should we get about this news that Russia has withdrawn the bulk of its Black Sea fleet from its main base in occupied Crimea? This is a pretty big setback for the Russians, isn't it?
Bob, indeed. Good afternoon from Lviv. This is made possible. The Ukrainian attack a couple weeks ago on Russia's Black Sea fleet and on the fleet's headquarters itself was made possible because of those long-range Storm Shadow missiles provided by the United Kingdom. And not only did the UK give permission, not only did the UK provide those weapons, but they very importantly gave Ukraine permission to hit targets in Crimea. And that's something that the United States has been very reluctant to do. And so the hope here is that seeing this success and seeing how unable Russia has been to respond in a dramatic way it was a very bold move, the Ukrainians hitting the headquarters, the vaunted headquarters of Russia's Black Sea Navy. This is pretty extraordinary. And now the Russians are forced to move further away so that their ships and submarines will not be so vulnerable to Ukrainian attack using missiles like the Storm Shadow. And so I think, and this is the Prime Minister of Estonia, Kaja Kallas, was saying at the past couple of days at the Warsaw Security Forum, this is the moment really to see the strengths of Ukraine and to double down on support rather than to sort of keep believing the Russian propaganda and to get weak-kneed. This is the moment where if Ukrainians can get more long-range weapons and support to hit Russian military targets, then victory can be realized, fairly quickly perhaps. And in Russia, there were stories yesterday that there were they were doing nuclear drills, and you see images of citizens wearing gas masks. And as I watch that, I'm thinking, this is the victim mentality of the Russians. They want to keep their population afraid. I mean, Russia is not being attacked except for occasional strikes on military targets, but yet they want to keep their citizens afraid to make them, the Russian people feel that the world is somehow oppressing them, when it is in fact they who are oppressing not only Ukrainians, but threatening the security of the world.
And what Ukraine is up against right now, pretty much, according to all the experts, of course, we've got the political deadlock and those arguments. You've got winter weather coming in, and the continuing advantage Russia has in manpower and ammunition, right?
Yeah, well, it's an advantage in numbers, but, and I think if you were here, you would say perhaps, definitely not an advantage in quality. As I saw at that tech conference, IT Arena in Lviv over the weekend, there are so many brilliant people here and others from around the world working to find solutions, so to use what resources they have most effectively. And actually, just about an hour ago, in one of the many fairy tale like medieval buildings of Lviv, I attended another conference called the Lviv Book Forum, traditionally one of the most popular festivals in this very literate, philosophical city. And it's great. It's really nice to see life coming back, despite people defying the threats of Russia. And from all over the world, you have writers and artists and editors have gathered here in Lviv. And the talk I just listened to was by a Bosnian writer, Ozren Cabo, and he was talking about the experience, the horrible experience in the 90s in the former Yugoslavia and the Balkans, and talking about, how to get through that, especially after the wars are over. And he said, there's a tendency, everyone's angry and everyone wants to shout and scream, and that's natural. But the key is we have to have calm public discourse. And he says that's only possible. He says, and he's an atheist, but he says it's only possible with these ideas of love and forgiveness. And so he was saying, that's what in Bosnia and Sarajevo, they've had to learn the hard way. But as I looked around me at the people in the conference, and I thought this is something that's been on my mind a lot the past few days. And when I took the train last week from Kyiv to Lviv, I see a calm society despite all of the threats they face. And, when I was on the train, I knew many people. I was walking five cars to get a cup of coffee from the dining car. And as I go, I see not only people I know, I see soldiers, I see children, and everyone is kind of in this together. It's very crowded. People bump into each other, but they're calm and polite. And I realize that you have Ukrainians, because of what they've gone through, but because of some kind of self-discipline, they have, despite it all, this incredibly calm society that where everyone is focused on this common mission for the most part. And obviously, there's always going to be problems and arguments, but they found a way, they have found a way to discuss things. And that's what I see at these conferences. They sit there and they talk about solutions. And, you know, when I studied at Notre Dame, I studied a lot of Aristotle's political theory. And I studied under some of the most brilliant political philosophers in the world. And Aristotle said the best form of government was this thing called timocracy, which is a hybrid of democracy and monarchy and aristocracy. And it means the rule of the honorable. And I remember asking my professors, you know, well, what is this timocracy? Aristotle said it's the best. Does it exist? And these brilliant political theorists had no answer. And when I was on that train from Kyiv to Lviv, and when I was attending these conferences here in Lviv, I think here's what Aristotle, the idea Aristotle was looking for thousands of years ago, a real democracy. It's like an elevated form of democracy where it's the rule of honorable people, people who have love and forgiveness and try to respect each other. Much of that is because they go through the same type of hell. And that's why they're able to achieve this. But that's what I see around me. And I want to share with you this clip of several friends and friends of friends who are soldiers. You know, when Elon Musk was sort of snidely tweeting about Zelensky a few days ago, that upset a lot of Ukrainians because they looked to him as a hero of innovation and free speech. And so several friends made this short clip. Most of them are talking to Elon and to you, to the audience, from the front lines. So halfway through, just to caution you, you will hear some of the sounds of war. And the first soldier speaks from a city because he was heavily wounded in battle. So here's the message from Ukrainian soldiers to Elon Musk and to the audience of WGN.
Mr. Musk, we invite you to Ukraine to see how we fight for our freedom.
Mr. Musk, we invite you to Ukraine to see why we are fighting for our freedom.
Mr. Musk, we invite you to Ukraine to see why we are standing for freedom. Welcome.
Hi, Mr. Musk. We invite you to Ukraine to see how we fight for our freedom. You are welcome to see it on your eyes. Slava Ukraini.
Is he going to get that message, Joe?
We hope so. So if anyone listening knows him, or you know, if you go to my Twitter, at JP Lindsley, we're trying to share these messages, and we have more and more Ukrainian soldiers making these videos. And you know, for anyone who's skeptical, you know, I mean, look, there's brave writers and artists here right now for this conference, and you know, it's safe enough, you know. And so for here in Lviv, so yeah, you're welcome, Mr. Musk. You're welcome to Ukraine and to see the reality and maybe to get some inspiration.
And again, Joe's Twitter handle at JP Lindsley, LINDSLEY. We'll talk tomorrow. Thank you, Joseph. Interesting stuff, as always.
Thank you, Bob. Until tomorrow.